This broadcast of Finding Fairways was pre-recorded and is a production of Blarney Stone Broadcasting. Good morning, golfers. Welcome to Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Today's episode brings Tom Coyne, the noted golf author, joining us throughout the entire show today, talking about his new book, A Course Called America. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jerry. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back on the show with my long-lost Irish cousin.
Yeah, it's been too long. I know we tried to do this last year, but obviously you are just completely swamped with the new project. Before we get into your latest book, A Course Called America, let's talk about the genesis of this, starting with your first, the book, A Course Called Ireland.
Yeah, you know, it's been, when you think about the whole road altogether, it's been literally quite a long road. I mean, the last three books have sort of grown out of each other and sort of built. A Course Called Ireland was a story where I played golf. I walked my way around the circumference of Ireland and played every golf hole that got in my way. And, you know, so that was 4 months. I did the whole thing on foot, 1,100 miles and 60-something courses. And I thought, you know, that'll be the craziest thing that I'll ever do in golf or in life. I did surprise myself then. I got maybe a little crazier with Scotland. No, I didn't walk Scotland. I played 110 rounds in 57 days and then tried to qualify for the Open Championship. So sort of another unreasonable, wild quest where I was looking for the secret to golf up in the highlands and the islands of Scotland. So that was a great trip and a different story than the Ireland one.
Yeah.
They're each different, which is good. And, you know, once you've done Ireland and Scotland, it kind of got to the point where, when am I going to do my own country? You know, like I'd gotten to the point where I definitely knew Ireland and Scotland golf-wise and otherwise, probably knew them better than my own country because, you know, I'd had to research them. I had to read, do the histories and write a book about those countries. And you know, you sort of take your own backyard for granted a little bit. And I'd certainly done that. And I said, well, it's time for me to give America a little bit of credit, golf credit. I'd probably knocked American golf for not having true links experiences, which is sort of my true love in golf and why I play so much in the British Isles. I said, well, let's see what America does have to offer. And, you know, I certainly discovered it has a lot.
Yeah, the 295 courses. This was over just over a year's length of time, Tom?
So it was 8 months on the road. It would have been, if I could have taken a year, I would have. It would have been a little more reasonable because I was playing 36 holes a day every day until the days got too short in like December where, because you were always building in not just the golf, but the drives.
Right.
And there was that, but yeah, 8 months. 8 months of you know, where I sort of broke up the country into maybe like 10 chunks.
Right.
So within that 8 month trip, there would be like 3 weeks in the Pacific Northwest, come home, see my family, change light bulbs, you know, do my chore list, head back out and do, you know, Long Island, which takes 2 weeks to do, and then go back and do New England and the Southwest. So I was doing it in sort of pieces that way, back and forth. So I have very good frequent flyer status. And then, you know, COVID hit, so I don't get to use it. But in any event, it was very good timing. I finished the travel right before the pandemic because it would have been a very short travel book had I timed it differently.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, the pandemic hits and you've got all the home time to hone this book and as we were talking off air, you know, the stories about the golf and then the people that you played with and the connectivity, history of different places, it's a magnificent assembly of golf and America and history and people that I don't think I've ever read in a golf book. And I've got a lot of golf books.
Thank you. The hope was to tell, you know, an American golf story through the travel. It was, it's funny. You set out to do these things and you don't know what you have until you're finished.
Right.
Certainly until you're finished the travel. And then you sit down and you start to figure out what the book's really about. And I realized, you know, this is sort of my love letter to golf in America and to America itself. You know, I'm looking for, you know, the true American golf experience, but I'm also looking for like America in 2019, which is when I was doing my trip.
Right.
And in finding those things, I mean, I hopefully the book becomes, you know, about bigger things than golf. And, you know, it's flattering that some people have echoed your sentiment that it tells, you know, the American golf story in an interesting way. So that's more than I could have ever shot for. So it's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and I didn't even give you the Bruce Springsteen compliment yet, but I want to go backwards a little bit. Like you just said, you don't know what you got until you do it. And A Course Called Ireland, which was the first of these three travel books, and what drew me to you was basically because I was going to Ireland and I was looking at some travel books and I go, oh, well, Tom Coyne, this has got to be a great book because, you know, the guy's...
Obviously,
he has to be a genius. Oh, by the way, do you know there's a John Coyne from Chicago who's a golf writer?
Absolutely. We've corresponded a few times. He was a Peace Corps writer.
Yeah.
I knew he came out of the Peace Corps and did some golf books. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And my grandfather's name was John Coyne. And so I gave my dad some of his books. It's funny.
I know. I got to reach out to John. I know he's not, it doesn't look like he's writing any longer, but I still got to give him a jingle. But anyways, the Ireland book, I thought Scotland would be similar to Ireland, and it's really not at all, other than the fact that it's got golf involved in it. You tell quite a personal story in there. The growth of your writing and the maturity of it, you know, involving yourself and your feelings is really incredible, and then that kind of washes over into America.
Yeah, I think there's definitely... if you were to pick up the books today and read them in that order, Ireland, Scotland, America, I think you'd go on quite, while I don't link them necessarily, that you would go on an emotional journey with me.
Yeah.
Through them, that like in the in-betweens as well, as my life changes, as I change, as you go from, you know, and even, gosh, you can take it back to a book I did called Paper Tiger before A Course Called Ireland, where I'm not married yet, and I'm living the most selfish golfing life one could possibly imagine. A Course Called Ireland, I'm married, but no kids.
Right.
So that part of marriage, it's just a party. Like, it's just funnies,
yeah.
Right? It's, mm-hmm. You know, like, we're married, and it's just a honeymoon, right? We don't have any responsibilities. We have a dog, and that's, and we consider that, like, the biggest deal in the... It is a big deal, but the biggest deal in the world that we have a puppy. So life is light and easy, and I feel like that book has that feel to it. It's a party, and that's fun and great. And then life changes. You know, I have kids. There's a big gap between the Ireland and Scotland book,
right,
during which I get sober, which is something I desperately needed to do for that book to exist. And I'm still that way today and loving every minute of it and loving life. And, you know, by the point in Scotland, we have two kids. My perspective on things has changed. Not that I'm not still having a ton of fun and a lot of laughs, probably more laughs, more genuine laughs than I've ever had. But I'm finding them in different places and with different people and in different contexts. And so being the Scotland book takes on, I think, a deeper meaning for me personally that I was even able to do it at all, because, you know, there was definitely a point where I wasn't writing. I didn't think I'd write anymore. I wasn't healthy. I was not in good shape. And to be able to then find myself in the Highlands of Scotland, having traveled the entire country, feeling alive as I've ever felt in my life, and to write a book about it, you know, that becomes a bestseller, you think like, man, life is one hell of a journey. And then, you know, here we are with America now too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Not that you beat it to death, but obviously your sobriety is an important portion of Scotland, especially when you contrast it with your best friend who came up with the idea to begin with.
There's, I mean, Robert is the character who is, you know, my foil in the story, if you will.
Right.
Who's living the life that I used to live. And so people get a glimpse of that. It's good and it's bad. And you can sort of contrast that with the life that I'm living now. And like you said, it's not a big thing. It's not something I beat to death at all in the story.
No.
If you're into whiskey and ale and wanted that part, that stuff's in there too. I mean, you can't write a Scottish book without some scotch. I just don't happen to be the... I'm just not the one drinking it this time.
Right.
Which I think makes for a better, more meaningful book. So, yeah, all that fun is still there. It's just, it comes in a different perspective.
Yeah, and like I said, it, the maturity that runs from... Ireland, and which isn't really very a mature book at all.
No. It's crazy. The idea is crazy. The event, the shenanigans are crazy. It's a good book to have there because I feel like it sells great. People really enjoy it.
Yeah.
There's a lot in there that I love about it. But it's kind of like looking at your teenage self, right?
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, having another book where, okay, now here's a book where I'm a father, where I've grown up a little bit more, and then here's a book from another stage of my life. So
yeah,
it's kind of fun to trace the three.
Yeah, you're not the main character. Probably maybe in Scotland you're the main character, although it's you and the trip itself, and you're not the main character in America, but you have enough of it in there for the perspective that maybe I'm Tom Coyne or whatever the reader gets the opportunity to see it through your eyes, because I don't think any of us are ever going to be able to do what you've done, and which makes me ridiculously jealous. And I'm sure you've heard that a bunch.
Jerry, I do it so you don't have to, man.
No, that's not the point.
I'm doing it so you don't have to quit your job and go golf for 8 months. Wouldn't that be terrible?
To save my marriage.
I take on these sacrifices so the rest of you don't have to risk your marriages and your home life. No, I'm glad you said that, because that's the point of this. I'm joking about this sort of selfless endeavor, but
right.
The idea that I'm going out and living every golfer's dream, and I want them to come with me and feel like it's their adventure too. Like, I don't want this to be a Tom Coyne story. Look at me. This is, I think America of all the books is very much an us story, from us as Americans, us as golfers, us as the big groups of people that would randomly show up and meet me at golf courses.
Yeah.
As I said on Twitter, I'm going somewhere. You know, it became a community almost immediately. And that's in thanks in part to social media and more people having read the other books. And so I think it's a story about all of us. And that's why it means a hell of a lot to me, for sure.
Yeah. And when we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll get into some of the guts of a course called America and how that evolved into what Tom was just talking about when we return on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle is on the phone. And Tim, like most of the state, we're going to have a lot of rain this weekend. It's a good thing carlsgolfland.com carries everything you need to play in the slop.
Yeah, it's going to be wet for a while here. It looks like for the foreseeable future. But we're checking all that rain gear in now every day from the brands, the FootJoys, all the top selling brands. We have, everything you can imagine from head to toe. Try to keep you as dry as possible out there, so don't shy away.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you really should make sure who the manufacturer is and how it's made, because not all rain gear is made the same.
No, and there's a bunch of different styles, too, in terms of fully waterproof. Some of it's just kind of, weather resistant, things like that. But our crew, our folks here will make sure to get you into something to keep you dry for sure.
Yeah, regardless of whether it's in the stores at Plymouth, at St. John, or in Bloomfield Hills, or online, that help exists to make sure that, hey, I've got my rain gear in the bag. You hope you never use it, but when you do, it's good that it's repelling the rain, not just soaking you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing with your footwear. A lot of people, we try to categorize it pretty easily, especially online, so you can really see what sort of waterproof warranties you have on your shoes. We have a filter on the website, actually, Jerry, where you can jump on there, men's or ladies, and, filter by the number of years your shoes have on waterproof warranty. You can sort by
1, 2, or 3 year. Yeah, so if you're looking for something waterproof, even in the shoe category, you can jump right on the website and see what sort of warranty you're getting with the shoes.
Yeah, for sure, Tim, because that's the thing that guys and gals think about last. You know, they go ahead and get the buckets, hats, and the jackets and the pants, then they never consider their shoes, and your feet are soaked yep. after just a couple of holes.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, been there too, let me tell you.
That's why we have carlsgolfland.com to count on. Tim, I guess we'll see you out on the course, rain or shine.
That sounds great. We'll see you there.
Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio on the phone with noted golf author Tom Coyne, who's just recently released the third of a trilogy, A Course Called America. And Tom, just to follow up on what you were saying at the end of the last segment, I never got the impression that once I got into the book that this was about, hey, look at Tom Coyne, I can go and play all these golf courses because I wrote some other books. And you have a big internet presence now, and that kind of really made the book work, or the trip and your travels with other golfers work so well.
Yeah, it was essential, really, Jerry. Like, when you think about how they sort of progressed, right? You know, Paper Tiger doing, like, no social media at all at that time. Ireland did, like, I don't know, a couple pictures on Facebook, and but that just wasn't a way I was in at all. Scotland, I was putting a lot of pictures on Instagram and got, you know, some followers that way, and was like, hey, this might be a way to actually sell some books, and, you know. But by the time America comes around, we'd actually sort of ramped up the social media marketing, even going before I went out on the trip, so that, you know, I'd have a bigger presence on these platforms in order to, you know, share the trip with people. Should I have a documentary crew with me while I'm doing this? Should this be like a film? You know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm traveling and going to these amazing places. What else can we get out of it, right? Other than a book. And then you're thinking, well, I've got it right here on my phone. You know, it's right here. It's called, you know, Instagram or Twitter or whatever, like,
right,
that I can capture these adventures in these other platforms. And so I really enjoyed doing that. It's amazing how much time it would take out of your day, like, doing that properly. But, you know, doing social media well can be like a full-time job. But the benefits of doing that, like you said, I had people join me in Scotland and Ireland, but they were people I knew or people who'd emailed, and we'd ranged, and they would, like, you know, it was maybe like a dozen. But, you know, I'd go to a golf course, you know, somewhere in Montana or in Mexico, where you wouldn't think that I'd be able to, with just showing up, would I get a game or would there be anybody there? And I could say on Twitter, I'm going to be at this golf course tomorrow, and, you know, 10 people would show up immediately. Not because I'm particularly, and that was what was so amazing and interesting. Most of them wouldn't have read any of my books. Right. Not because, like, I'm, like, famous or anything. It's just because there's a great community on, as we call it, golf Twitter, or on Instagram.
Right.
That's grown up around, like, things like the Golfer's Journal or No Laying Up or Eric Anders, like these different sort of golf influencer kind of circles. And once you kind of, like, tap into those groups of golfers, they're they're excited. They want to go play. They're up for adventures. They want to go do different things. And if some traveling dude is showing up in their town that they saw picking him on Instagram, it's like, hey, I'm going to hang out with that guy. And it's, you know, whether they know me or not. And some of them did happen to know me or read the books, which is great. But a lot of times it was meeting new people. And so it became a community. And that was like just such a wonderful thing. And it happened like pretty quickly. And that is thanks entirely to social media. Really helped spread the word of like the sort of where in the world is the wandering golfer guy today. You can check it out on Twitter and say, oh, hey, he's headed my way. Let me shoot him a note and see if we can play. And that's how I scored a lot of my rounds too, is just people offering them
right
through social media as well. So it was just really, really a valuable tool.
Yeah, I was going to, you split me in two different directions. So I'll go with this one first. You just mentioned Montana. It just so happens that I've played Old Works. And
wow.
Yeah, I know. Anaconda, Montana. My buddy has an elk hunting ranch there. And we played.
Of course he does.
Of course he does. Well,
what else did you do at Anaconda?
I don't know if you spent any time, because you didn't mention it in the book. We'll talk about the course for a second first. So not only do you play that golf course, but you play it with a silo missile commander.
Yes. That was quite a day.
Yes.
That was one where I definitely thought, all right, I'm showing up in Montana, I'm playing by myself, right?
Right.
This is pretty far flung. There's not a lot going on in Anaconda. It was a great mining area.
Yeah.
But now what's left are basically the cleanup sites.
Exactly.
It's quite sadly, it's something of a toxic mess out there. From the smelting and the whatnot, but Old Works was built over a super fun cleanup site. So it's a way to, you know, they reclaim some of the land that way. And it's a really good golf course.
Yeah, it is.
It's a beautiful setting, yep. You know, and you can, you know, within this sort of like quarry or mine with scratches on the rock walls where they've been pulling the ore out of it's just a wonderfully dramatic and beautiful setting. So I thought I'd certainly be playing it alone, but again, via Twitter, someone reached out and said, hey, I'm passing through. I'm going from base to base. Being transferred. You know, I'm in the airport. You know, can I hang out with you? And, you know, but it's like, oh, hey, all right, what do you do at the airport? It's like, well, I'm a missileer. And what's that? Launch the missile. We turn the key. I'm like, you turn the key. I'm like, wow, what are the chances? And, you know, then for the rest of the round, I was watching him pretty closely, Jerry, to make sure. You know, because if he started like throwing clubs and cursing, a blue streak, I was going to be a little bit anxious. No, but he turned out to be the most level-headed, gentle, thoughtful guy. He was like, all right, you're cool. I'm glad you're down there or in the bunker, wherever you are. You're suited to the job. And then we got met, and two other guys came out and met us, guys who played every course in Montana.
Right.
Came to meet us. And that was just awesome. My friend Jerry, and, you know, it was just another Jerry with a G. And we had a great, great day. So that was a good example of the miracle of the social media.
Yeah. Just for laughs, you probably did not go into Anaconda downtown. If you did, all of those restaurants and everything else were built in the gold, you know, in the 1920s. They still all look ornate and everything else, because at one point in time, Anaconda had like was the per capita income leader in the country. Those miners were making a fortune.
Really?
Yeah, and so it's like almost like a ghost town. It's a pretty cool sight. So I really
appreciate. I should have checked that out. I was there. No, I was one where, you know, it was golf course.
Right.
And back to where? Somewhere to try and sleep. Somewhere for that evening. But, you know, that would have been cool to see.
Yeah. So you visited all 50 states, correct?
I did.
So Alaska had to be a pain in the butt.
Alaska was fun in that, you know, I timed it so that I'd be there during the summer solstice. And yeah, I mean, there's no easy or convenient way to get up there. I tacked it onto my Pacific Northwest trip. So flew from Seattle, you know, went from playing Chambers Bay, and the next, and, you know, morning I'm teeing it up in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And, you know, played golf all day, stayed up till 11 and teed off at 11 p.m. at a golf course on the base at Chena Bend. So I was on an Army base where right. There's a good 18-hole golf course up there. And played through the night. It never got dark. It was playing golf till 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. was pretty great. It was just like the 36 holes in Alaska is a pretty surreal kind of divergence on your itinerary, you know, where you're like, where am I? Because then I had to get home. You got off the course at 3 in the morning, 5 o'clock flight to Seattle, then Seattle direct to Philadelphia, got home like at midnight in Philadelphia, went to bed, woke up, and my wife's like, you're on the tee. Because I have my club championship the next morning, so and I just come from a golf course at midnight in Fairbanks. I'm like, what the heck am I doing to myself? Needless to say, I didn't win that club championship, Jerry.
I want to talk about your golf scores when we return here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com, as we continue our conversation with noted golf author Tom Coyne. Welcome back to Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne in studio on the phone with noted golf author Tom Coyne. We're discussing his latest book, A Course Called America. And Tom, you know, I want to call you like the worst professional golfer in the world, because you now, especially as we were talking off air, you're doing this all professionally. Golf is your profession. And, you know, you're a better player than I am, except for I did eclipse you in a couple places here. So, I mean, the scores are good. Yeah. The scores are – some of them are good. So, but I could never do what you did. Playing 36 a day, man, you got to be in some kind of golf shape.
You get there, you know. It's with all these books, like I've had ambition to get in shape. I told myself I'd get in shape before doing them, right?
Right.
And then you don't, because you get busy. Life intervenes. You get busy doing other things, and you figure, like, hey, I'll just get in shape while I'm doing it. So, you know, you start out. It's been the same with all of them. The first 2 weeks are pretty sore and painful, a lot of cramps. But after those 2 weeks, then you're like, ooh, you probably lost a good chunk of weight. And, you know, if you're walking 2 golf courses a day, you're doing at least 12 miles in that range. It's pretty good. And, you know, so you're going to lose some weight, which is going to help.
Right.
And then you're going to get stronger, too. So I eventually got into shape where 36 a day was a piece of cake, really. And it would feel weird not doing it, which is crazy. But it got, that's the way the routine got. Now, scoring, sometimes, it was funny, like, so if I'm playing 4 nines a day, like, my first 9 would be pretty lousy because I'd be achy and sore and just getting loose. I never had time to hit balls because I was always just getting there and golfing. But I'd be ready by my second 9 score was usually really good.
Right.
And then my next 9 would be good, my front 9 on the second course, and then my last 9 would be lousy because I'd be tired and I'd be done.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So if I could take my middle 18... I feel like my middle 18 every day was a really good score usually. But hey, they're all in the book. They're all there for,
yeah.
I kept score everywhere, kept track of all the birdies and this. So, cause you know, the idea is, and this goes back to the Ireland book where I was going to play the golf course, like one giant golf course. So I put together a scorecard for all of Ireland and put all my scores in it. And you know, I was 600 over par or whatever, but I live to tell the tale, and I don't know what I am in America. I'm way over par in America.
Us Irish, we're not great at math, so the only thing I looked at was the holes and the courses. And I do want to reiterate, kudos to you. Every single round in this book, all 295 rounds, you walked.
Absolutely. The only time where, it's funny, in America, which would be very different than the Ireland and Scottish experiences, there are some golf courses that require you to take a golf cart.
Right.
That only happened on maybe three occasions that come to mind.
Uh-huh.
Where because of the distance between golf holes and the fact, you know,
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's unfortunate. Usually it's because you're working your way around some sort of real estate situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're working your way around some sensitive environmental, which I have more sympathy for, as for a reason to taking golf carts than like driving through communities. But yeah, there were a few of those. I mean, yeah, I need to walk golf course. I don't take golf carts. It's just not. And hey, if you do, to each their own. And you play your golf and you love your golf and it's all good. It's just not for me. I'm an old caddy and
I get it.
I just like taking the golf course at that pace. I also need to get my steps in, Jerry. I mean, sitting at the desk for 5 months writing this book during a pandemic, I'm not going to lie to you, put on a couple pounds. So I need to get that. That's my exercise. I don't go to the gym. I go walk 18 holes.
Now, how many times were you carrying your own bag?
Almost always. I took a caddy. Like, you know, when you go to, like, Shinnecock or National or Oakmont, you know, you're taking a caddy. But it wasn't really in my budget to have too many loopers along the way.
Right.
It was great when I'd have a host who was like, "Hey, we got set up with caddies and we're taking care of it and everything." That was always really helpful because, you know, the budget was, I definitely blew the budget again on this one.
Yes, you did.
But and thankfully we did that because traveling in the Midwest, where you have this wonderful Evans scholarship where you are, which is something that was news to me. I mean, we have a great caddy scholarship in Philadelphia called the J. Wood Platt, but it's not the size or scope of what's going on with the Evans. So that gets sort of its own chapter in the book.
I got to read that part.
That I met. Well, the caddy culture in the Midwest is just outstanding. Whereas in so many parts of the country, it's falling away and in decline. Caddy culture in Michigan, Ohio, Chicago,
right,
is top level because you have this extraordinary scholarship that you can get that's a full ride plus a place to live. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I was in a caddy at Oakland Hills, and not only did my best friend win an Evans scholarship at the University of Michigan, his brother and his sister did as well. And I've been to almost every one of those Evans scholar houses across the Midwest. So yeah, I'm very well aware of Evans scholarship. In fact, that's my golf bag, is an Evans bag from one of their outings. And I know you mentioned that you're a caddy, so I get the walking for sure. But you mentioned Shinnecock, and I've played there. That's a hell of a score. You shot 74 at Shinnecock, and I wanted to mention the guy that you played with. Now, I haven't read the whole book yet, but as far as I could see, I want to be Jimmy Dunn when I come back in my next life.
We all do, Jerry, There's no doubt about that. No, that was a really special day. It was the first time I'd met Jimmy. I certainly knew of him and had heard, he's a literal legend in golf, and he would not be comfortable being with that characterization, but he is. And, you know, does so much for so many people and does so much for golf, too. So to be able to spend a day with him, and he hosted me and a friend. Jimmy's a big Notre Dame guy on the board there. And,
right.
I hope this, this is okay with your listeners. You mentioned Michigan.
No, I know,
so
you're a domer.
This is the Notre Dame portion of the story. So it was me and my other Notre Dame friend who was closer to when Jimmy went there. Anyway, had introduced us and set up this day of golf where we played Shinnecock and National Golf Links. And then afterward, I went to his home in the Hamptons to interview him for our podcast at the Golfers Journal, and which that interview sort of ends up in the book as well. So it's pretty extraordinary stuff. He's lived a life of extraordinary ups and downs, and has come out, as one of the most, as I call him in the book, the most interesting man in golf, in terms of not just for all the courses that he belongs at, but the people that he plays with.
Right.
And also the fact that he's kind of a normal guy at the end of the day. That's the best part of the whole thing. So, the Jimmy Dunn chapters are some of the, I think, are some of my favorite, and I think are some that readers will enjoy the most.
I've only got 30 seconds before the next segment, but was that the best 1-2 punch for one day, Shinnecock and National?
Good one. Oakmont, Fox Chapel, also very solid. What did I do in L.A.? I think I did Riv and LACC in one day, which is also excellent. In Chicago, I think I might have done Chicago and on Wednesday, back-to-back, strong, quite strong. But yeah, Shinny National is the best two-banger, I'd say.
Yeah. I love the little story there at the end when you go to the cemetery where Rayner and McDonald are buried next to each other. I didn't know that story. That's really kind of incredible.
It was crazy. And to find one, to be able to find them, because I had horrible directions, and it's a huge cemetery. But then to come around the corner and just see Rayner and turn around and there's McDonald, and you're like, wow. And yeah. I was on my way to play National that day. So that one hit me in the tingly spots for sure.
Yeah. Just another great story in the book, A Course Called America. When we return, we'll get some particulars about how he ranked, Tom Coyne ranked the courses, and we'll dwell on the ones from Michigan, which some of them are right here in our own backyard. That's when we return on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Welcome back to Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. We're continuing our conversation with noted golf author Tom Coyne, who's just released A Course Called America. And Tom, of course, you visited, what was it, 7 courses in Michigan?
That seems a little light. Didn't I do more than that?
No, it was 8.
Maybe. Yeah.
No, 9.
So
pardon
where
me.
Did I start? I don't have the book in front of me.
No, it's 9. I apologize.
No apology necessary. I mean, I start down. Where did I go? Where did I started down? You know, in your
you started in Ann Arbor,
southeastern corner.
Yeah, no, you started in Ann Arbor Leslie Park, and
yes.
I don't know. You didn't. You don't mention Oakland Hills in the book. I noticed that you played there. That's my old home golf course, but
loved it. I think I talk about it in the chapter. Some of the stuff isn't all sequential, but I do think I get into the
okay.
I think I discussed the locker room at some point.
The two locker rooms.
In any event, yeah. I had a great day there. A lot of history there. So.
No doubt. Anyways, a number of courses that we have in our backyard here in northern Michigan, Acadia Bluffs, Crystal Downs, and the Loop Black and Red. And then probably one of the biggest surprises for you was the golf course, and it's a great story that you tell about Wawashtemo, around Mackinac Island, I should say.
Mackinac.
Yeah.
Right. Is it Mackinac or Mackinac?
Like, it's Mackinac. It? Yes, right. Trust me.
I'll believe you. You live there. Okay.
They're an advertiser.
exactly. Yeah. Well, that was just such a cool trip. I mean, I love the Michigan swing, and it obviously could have been much longer.
Right.
So much great golf in Michigan. But that was, if you just went for pound for pound, how great that you know, week was, that is as good as any. Up to Forest Dunes, you know, we stayed a couple nights so we could do the loop and play it in both directions. That was a very, for me, a significant moment in terms of, one, appreciating Tom Doak.
Right.
Who I just thought just did magic there. And then just this idea of a reversible course and how it could really work and all the benefits of having that. It was just there's just so much meat on that bone that I just loved everything about the idea. For this Philadelphian was just so treated so well, and so I loved that. And then I'd seen that there was this 9-hole golf course on an island,
right?
off the sort of tip of Michigan. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. Like, I'm looking for quirky, I'm looking for different, looking for places people don't know about. And that was right up my alley. And it was just something I saw on Google Maps. No one had recommended it, or, you know, and the website looked cool. And I said, all right, so I put it on the list, and I gave myself, you know, 3 hours to get it done because the nine holers are easy, and got there. And my GPS literally took me to a big lake, to the edge of a lake, to the end of a road. You know, I see people in line, I see boats, and well, I guess I'm up there in what's, I don't even know what little town that is, that's right across from the island.
Mackinac City, it's called.
And yeah. So I'm like, where's the bridge? And, you know, I just assumed there was, if I was going to golf on an island, there would be a bridge. And so not only, you know, they instructed me that I had to get out of my car, or that it was a ferry ride. It wasn't a car ferry because there weren't any cars on the island.
Right.
I knew none of this. And people told me to, like, no, you knew all this. And you said, I'm like, if you were planning 300 tee times across the course of a year, you don't really have time to look into the, like, the minutia and those kinds of details about how do I get to every course. You assume you'll be able to get there via land, so, or a land bridge. So anyway, I'm like, okay, my day just got a little bit longer. This is no 3-hour trip now, but now I'm so intrigued that there's, like, there's no way I'm missing this. So I park the car, get on the ferry with my golf clubs.
Yep.
First, and started walking. You know, I get into town, I walked, I saw a golf course, and it was the hotel's golf course. And I'm like, nope, you got to keep going. So I had another mile and a half, I guess, up the road, which when you're walking is a significant enough distance.
It's all uphill, too.
I wasn't in my Ireland shape, and it is all uphill. It is. It literally is. But found it and was, you know, very, very late for my tee time and had to apologize, explain to them that I didn't realize I wouldn't be driving here. So, but man, what a great find and what great people and the great history of that little nine-holer, you know, and the role that it plays in the War of 1812. And,
right.
You know, becomes, I did it as a story in both the Golfer's Journal and then, you know, used a lot of that in the chapter in the book, because it's a story that I wanted to shout from the rooftops about, look at this place that I found in Michigan, on Mackinac Island. So I did take a horse taxi back from the golf course, but just absolutely loved my day there. And then Michigan gets even better from there. I mean, you go down and play Arquette and then Crystal Downs, you know, one of the more special, I mean, really, of all the courses, and I played some pretty exclusive ones, tough to get on golf courses. I don't know if there's any tougher tee time than Crystal Down.
Right.
For the reason that the members, there's very few. And they all, it's my understanding that they would have to, like, sort of own property in the community.
Right.
So that limits the membership, and it makes it probably a little more regional than, say, clubs that have these national memberships where, yeah, I might know somebody that has a membership in Cyprus that lives in New York or Philadelphia.
Right.
You're not going to bump into too many Crystal Downs members in your travels. So I was really, really fortunate to find one.
Tom, I'm sorry to say our hour is up and we didn't even get to, like, half the questions that I had. And so that'll just be the impetus for our listeners to go out and buy the book, A Course Called America, and also follow you on all the social media stuff, because you are doing a lot of very cool stuff. Go over that really quickly.
Yeah. No, you can follow me at CoinWriter on Instagram or Twitter. And I'm doing a lot of travel this summer, going to different clubs and through the Midwest. I'll be back up at Forest Dunes for the duel at the end of August, which is going to be great. So I'm still traveling, still love to meet people, doing book signings, and I'm actually available to come to your club and do a book event. So you can, tomcoin.com is a good way to get in touch with me, or at CoinWriter on any of the social sites is great as well.
Tom Coin, thanks so much for taking the time out of a very busy schedule to join us here on Finding Fairways, the book, A Course Called America, Finding Fairways. As we like to say, find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll be back with you next week. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. Ken Griffin is on the phone with me. Ken, the action at Boyne just continues to get bigger and larger, and now you've got, what is that, Golf Week Raiders coming in to rate the golf courses.
It was a very busy week, Jerry. In addition to our normal golfers, which was very busy, we also hosted a number of riders from all over the U.S., as well as a Golf Week Raiders trip that's coming in on Sundays. Conditions are in great shape. You know, we received a little bit of rain. It's only going to improve the great conditions, but helps out the team. But like we've been talking about, the tee sheets are filling up. And like we warned last week, you and I talked about the Canadian government is going to start to soften the border regulations. And we know the Canadians kind of have been waiting maybe not so patiently to come play golf in June, which means that our course and all the other courses are going to see some increased demand because they haven't been here in 15 months. There'll be more people trying to get those limited amount of tee times. So I guess the thing there is, don't wait. The earlier you book, the better chance of getting the tee time you want.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Going back to the all the golf writers visiting, with the continued awards that Boyne Golf gets, you get more and more people wanting to experience it and write about it.
That's it exactly, from tour operators to writers. So it's great to be able to host them and let them to share what a great golf experience Northern Michigan can be and what our courses and resorts can be.
And then it's golf-related, but you are now starting up the Cliff View Kart Cruises at Bay Harbor. Talk a little bit about that, Ken.
Well, we've all known that there's beautiful views, and I know you have and I have. We've enjoyed those beautiful views and those beautiful sunsets playing a late afternoon round. And now you have the ability. These are actually evening rounds, so you have a better chance of that sunset. But they're one-hour kart cruises. They're $49. It includes your beverage of choice, and then you can, of course, go to the girl afterwards for continued views of sunset. But it's really for golfers and non-golfers, Jerry, or maybe somebody plays in the morning and they never get the sunsets, or maybe they get to play but their spouse never plays, so they don't have any idea what those views are like out across Lake Michigan. So it's a guided tour across six holes on the Links and Quarry course, so you're with somebody, you take a cart out, spectacular views that all of us that are out there in the evening know and enjoy, and now whether you're a golfer or a non-golfer, you can enjoy those views.
It is just amazing, the perfect sunsets that you get just about every day there, and now you don't have to pay the freight or be a golfer. You can enjoy it with your spouse, and it's so pretty at Bay Harbor. Just part of the 10 great golf courses at BoyneGolf.com.
Yeah, and for any information on Cliffview Kart Cruises, the courses, the resorts, packages, or to book a tee time before the Canadians do, go to BoyneGolf.com.
Thanks, Ken. We'll see you out on the course.
See you, Jerry.